somebody said the band was cool. So I went to the record shop and I picked up a bunch of CDs that had like Iron Maiden on them. Eddie made my life and my colleague's life very miserable.
And it's also special because you know what happens, but you don't see it because it's blacked out. And that's the most creepy stuff, when your imagination starts, I think.
Exactly. Ever since I was a kid, I really loved making pictures, and that's about it, I'm making pictures.
Hallo, liebe Metal-Meute, und herzlich willkommen zum Outcast. Hallo, Witchel.
Grüße.
Und we switch to English now, because we got a guest today.
Hello, hello.
Eliran Kantor. Welcome, Eliran.
Nice to be here.
How's your name pronounced? Sorry.
How did you say it? Let's say it one more time.
Eliran or Eliran?
Yeah, you said it right. Eliran Kantor. Eliran or Eliran. It's basically the same. I don't think nobody says Eliran. Yeah, maybe. Something was okay. Eliran, something was Eliran.
Both. All right, okay. Eliran. Maybe lots of people don't really know your name, but probably know your work, as you are a cover artist.
Mm-hmm.
How would you describe your work?
How would I describe my work? I think my work changes all the time because, as you said, I work mainly with bands, so I try to fit myself to each and every one of the records I do. And it's funny when I read reviews in the press, then I find out that I'm a horror artist or a fantasy artist or a science fiction artist, yeah, okay, or a surrealist or whatever. I don't think about it in these terms. Ever since I was a kid, I really loved making pictures, and that's about it. I'm making pictures, and most of them are done specifically in order to be album covers for heavy metal bands. I think that's basically the longer version of it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, at the beginning, I would like to start with some kind of introduction questions to get you to know you a little bit better.
Yeah, sure.
Also with some art questions, maybe. Do you prefer Jan van Meer or Peter Paul Rubens?
Rubens, for sure.
Rubens.
Because Vermeer was amazing when it comes to grasping the behavior of light, which is amazing on a technical level. But with Rubens, what I really love about him is something that can't be just replicated with a camera or by learning a technique. It's about the sense of motion and the sense of action. Mm-hmm. And if you look at, if you compare their pieces, Vermeer's pieces look basically dormant in comparison to the amazing epic movement that you're going to get when you're looking at the Rubens. But to be honest with you, I didn't grow up in this environment where I was analyzing classical art. I only got into it very, very later on in the game, like maybe a few years ago. Because because my introduction to it was very superficial. I wasn't drawn to fine art. I wasn't drawn to reading up about history and everything. But my introduction to it was through Monty Python's animation skits, where they would cut off parts of old classical paintings and make animation with it. So This is what I liked, using the old aesthetics in order to create something that was funny and weird and grotesque. And over the last few years, I started going back and catching up with the basics, just because I was familiar with tons of these pieces, but on a very, very superficial way, which I still am. If you if you ask me a few more questions about Vermeer and Rubens, I can maybe squeeze out a couple of more minutes out of it. But then if you ask me again, like we talked about Manowar 5 minutes ago, I can jab on and on and on about every metal band. I'm still very much into learning, into observing, into absorbing all of this rich culture that now we have amazing access to. Because I remember as a kid, my dad used to come back from business trips to Europe, and he would go to museums and buy the brochures. And this is like that was the high resolution version of the artwork that I was able to see in my home, because it was either that or go to the bibliothek. I keep forgetting words in each and every language. Go to the library and pick it up.
Library.
But yeah, we would come back with those amazing brochures from Italy and from Holland and from Belgium. And I remember those were like the stuff you get for free at the gift shop. That's the ones that they tell you a little bit about each and every piece that you're going to see in the museum. But for me, that was my introduction to proper learning about the background. But I was too young to even read all about it. So I was just looking at the pictures. But it was fun.
Mm-hmm. So you didn't study art or something like that? You learned it all by yourself? Or
no,
how did
no.
you get into it?
I only studied art as a kid. I went to drawing lessons when I was around 5 or 6. And then again when I was 10. And I think I was taught the basics of using various mediums, perspective, composition. I mean, in a level that corresponds to your age. I was, again, 6 and 10. And afterwards, it was mainly like trial and error for years.
Oh, okay.
I'm still erroring.
Yeah, but we don't see that at your covers because I would say they look amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you. And it's all about, you know, I've been doing it ever since I was a kid. So I'd be embarrassed if I wasn't getting a little bit better at this point.
Of course. So we get more into metal covers. Do you prefer John Dyer Basley or Ken Kelly?
Oh, that's a good comparison. John Dyer Basley or Ken Kelly. When I try to compare, when it's such a close call, I think I will go with which one is my favorite piece by each and every one of them. And I think Ken Kelly, the stuff he did for Manowar, has had a little bit more of an influence on me, because I find myself using a little bit of it as reference. If you look at what I did earlier this year for Malevolence, I did an album cover for them called Malicious Intent, and the main character on the album cover, you can see that their face are completely blacked out, and that's a direct reference to the Manowar warrior. So I can't reference the guy and then not give him proper respect. So I would go with Ken Kelly. I met John. He had a pop-up exhibition for a few hours, very like 20 meters from my studio. I met him for maybe 15, 20 minutes, and it was very nice. And he's an amazingly talented guy, both Baroness Music, but also his style when it comes to album covers is so recognizable and so often imitated and copied. The aesthetic value of it is amazing. I mean, you can put it on a heavy metal album cover,
detailed,
you can put it on the wall in your living room, it works. It's just so aesthetically pleasing, the stuff that he does. And yeah, it's so often copied. It's amazing how many people he influenced in a very short amount of time that he did all of those album covers.
Yeah. Great. So as we talked about Manowar, what is your favorite band?
My favorite band? I will go with Merciful Fate and King Diamond. Don't let me choose between the two, because it depends if I was listening to them or Abigail or Melissa lately. And then that will affect my final call. But yeah, that has been my favorite band ever since I was maybe 15.
Ah, great. Yeah, it's always the bands you start with. Yeah,
and I just got to meet them Master of Fate and King Diamond.
Great.
A few weeks ago.
Yeah, and touring again.
And I was so starstruck. I tried not to. It was a little bit before the show. I was able to go backstage and meet them in the dressing room and just say that I'm a big fan and take a photo together. But before the show, you don't want to talk to the guy too much and ruin his voice. So I actually said that. Maybe talked about Uriah Heep for maybe 5 minutes. And then I said, have a great show. I'm really looking forward to see it. I'm a huge fan. Melissa and Bam are my favorite albums of all time. So just see what's on stage. That was an amazing concert as well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was my next question. What's your favorite album? But you already answered it.
Yeah. It's either Melissa or Bam.
And what is your favorite song? One of those?
Oh, if I have to pick a favorite song, I would go with Satan's Fall for Merciful Fate and maybe Black Horseman for King Diamond. I know it's from Abigail, but just that specific song stands out. It's just a perfect song. You have like the perfect journey. The build-up, the ending, the
nice dramatic
beginning. It's got all the trademarks and it's just an amazingly constructed song, and Satan's Fall is just it's just an incredible once in a lifetime song. It doesn't have any structure. It's like riff, and then they riff, and they play that riff for a while, then it stops, then they come up with a new riff, and then it just goes on and on for like 12 minutes. And it's amazing that it turned out to be like an amazing song, and it's magical. You can't come up with this kind of stuff. That's not how you build a song, but it ended up like amazing. I'm a huge fan of this stuff.
Great.
And 12 minutes of it just means that there's more to listen to.
Yes.
It's 12, is it? Maybe I'm confused that it's 9 minutes, but it's somewhere around 9.
I'm not sure.
With my favorite albums, I don't bother even checking the lyrics or the track listing because I just put all my favorite records, I hit play, and that's it. So I have no idea if the song has been on for 3 minutes or 7 minutes or whatever.
Yeah. At the end, it doesn't really matter how long they are. If they're a good song, it can be 2 minutes. I'm a huge Misfits fan. Also 1.5 minutes.
Yeah.
It can be 10 minutes.
Misfits are an amazing band because like tons of their like very big hits were never like properly recorded. If you listen to the studio version of Die Die My Darling on headphones, you can hear a telephone ringing in the back.
Oh, really? I didn't hear that.
Check it out. If you listen to Die Die, there's a phone ringing and somebody just, I don't know, maybe they recorded it at like rehearsal, at soundcheck. I have no idea how they recorded it, but it became so influential. It influenced so many bands. It created like, it helped create thrash metal. It helped create some of the biggest bands in the world, like Metallica and everything. And now Misfits are playing stadiums. And they never bothered to even properly record the stuff until like maybe the 2000s.
Especially at the beginning. But yeah, it was end of the 70s and didn't got money or maybe not the equipment. I also read that Doyle started playing with a bass amp instead of a proper guitar amp. And they got a really cheap sound, but it was special for them to get that sound.
Yeah, and it has soul. It's not so dead like all the modern stuff. It has some soul. Then you hear a phone ringing or the guitar sliding. And yes, that's iconic.
Oh, it is. And it has just this, what I like about organic production is that it's prone to have happy accidents. So when everything is a happy accident, you come up with an album that sounds like really different from other albums because the drums don't sound like drums on other albums. The guitars doesn't sound, everything sounds different and it gives it its own unique personality, which is something that like every band in the 70s and 80s just basically was forced to have because everything was experimenting basically. Yeah. Everybody was just trying to find the sound that works and it ended up being iconic.
And it wasn't like today when you have a digital technique that you can edit everything and preamp and all that stuff. And Back in the days, you recorded and that's what it...
Yeah, when it started out, I mean, every technology, when it's fresh and when it's new, that it gives a specific, like the first wave of bands, it gives them the personality. I mean, when Meshuga did it, when Fear Factory did it, yeah, it sounded like them. It was very special. It felt futuristic. Yeah. It really felt like, I remember first time listening to Meshuga or Fear Factory, it was like, this is music from the future, Ministry as well. So it's not about the tools, it's about how much are you going to experiment and try to find your own sound and try to find your own personality, or are you going to use exactly the same setup that everybody else is using? Because
that's true.
I mean, a lot of people just miss the point, which is not about futurism and modernism and high tech, which is about looking for something new, looking for something that will be futuristic and different. And those bands were pioneers in this because they were looking for ways to create new sounds. So when it was fresh, so
doing your own stuff and don't copy anything.
Yeah, so even if it's super digital, super edited, super everything, but it still has that sense of experimentalism and creativity, then it, you come up with something that has its own personality and it sounds like them. It's still with every like modern band that I listen to, those like 80% of today's band, the guitar sounds like Fear Factory basically. So it's, I mean, they're even, I would say, underrated as far as influence is concerned, just because of the production choices that they made back in 96 still resonates to this day.
I really liked, nearly loved Fear Factory, but then I saw them live and I was totally disappointed, and that's why I don't hear them anymore.
Yeah, I get it. No, but the records are amazing, for sure.
Yeah, the records are amazing. They are, yeah. But yeah, that's also a point. As a band, you need to be good on every level, kind of. So
I mean, you're forced to do it. I mean, I know tons of bands back in the 90s didn't want to play live at all, and some of them were able to do it, like Dark Throne and Bathory. And I remember half of the Norwegian bands haven't played during the 90s, like Arcturus and Ulver, I can't remember. There were tons of them that I never thought I would even get to see live. But yeah, if you want to do it professionally, some of those bands will say, I hate performing, I hate touring. But you have to take it. I mean,
I can understand it, but for me, what makes music special is to see it live. So for me, a band who's just in the studio can be good, can be great, but there's something missing if I don't get the opportunity to see them.
Yeah, I get it.
Because I want to see how they perform it and how they recreate the sound maybe they got on the record, because sometimes it's also different as it is on the record. So
some bands for me, that's special. Some bands are better live. I remember
when
Anathema stopped being metal, they became very much alternative rock. I stopped paying attention to them, and then I saw them at Grasspop. And I just loved it. And the show was so good. And the same thing with The Gathering. The Gathering, when they stopped being metal, I bought a few of the records and then it just didn't grab me the same way. But when I saw them live, all of a sudden, I really fell in love with the new songs as well. And then came back and listened to them back at home. Some bands just pull it off live. And basically, you can go to a bad show, you can go to a good show. It's they have off days and they have on days.
Yeah, of course. Okay, let's continue with the question.
I love the fact that you have this question. That's cool.
It was intended as a short 1 minute questions, but it's great that we can talk about a lot of it.
Oh yeah, sure.
So we just. Go on. What's your favorite album cover that's not from you?
It's hard to pick a favorite album cover, but when it comes to the most influential, I have to go with Killers by Maiden, because I still remember the moment I saw it and the effect it had on me. and how much I just grabbed it, and I said, okay, I don't need to even listen to a single note out of this record. I remember I saw the name of the band on Beavis and Butthead. Beavis and Butthead said the band was cool. So I went to the record shop and I picked up a bunch of CDs that had like Iron Maiden on them. But Killers just looked like it's for sure going to be like the best out of those records, because the album cover was just so striking, and that yellow light and that pose and everything. Eddie made my life and my colleagues' life very miserable, because everybody after Eddie wanted to have their own Eddie. But you can see why. I mean, it was so attention-grabbing. It was so impactful. It was undeniable. And I think it was felt, I mean, I felt it at the same time that millions of kids around the world felt exactly the same thing, and went out and bought the album, bought the t-shirt,
and back home. And bought some shoes.
And watched the videos late at night when they were playing, and just got mesmerized by the entire thing. It created this like fantasy world that is just unparalleled.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, but we was the same. I went to the record show and picked up an Iron Maiden CD and saw it. The first one I bought was Rock in Rio, and this was the one where Eddie is a stage, and it looks so cool. And I think I have to buy this CD. I don't know which music they make. Maybe it's shit, but it's lucky it was not. It's one of my favorite bands. And yeah, it was the Eddie is so iconic, and this I think it's one of the most metal mascots you have, especially at Snaggletooth, but you have Eddie, and everyone knows Eddie, and he's so cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And what's amazing about Eddie is that you can make an Iron Maiden album cover that doesn't look at all like an Iron Maiden album cover, but if you have like a tiny face of Eddie, like a Power Slave basically doesn't even look like a heavy metal album cover. But when you talk to many Maiden fans, a lot of them say that this is their favorite album cover, which is amazing.
Because, yeah, it's mine as well.
Because like 95% of it doesn't look like a metal album cover or a Maiden album cover. It's just about grabbing the focal point, grabbing the essence. And Derek Riggs was amazing in the way that he managed to realize that as long as he makes a great Eddie face, he can go wild with everything else and bring the fans of the band onto a journey to somewhere new, and everybody will be happy to tag along for the ride, because everybody will be looking at something that is so familiar for them, so reassuring for them, that the band is still the band that they love, but everything around it just makes you think, okay, the band is going to do something exotic, something creative, something different. They have new ideas. They have something else new to offer while still being basically the same band, and which is why this is like one of the most effective album covers I've ever seen.
Yeah, that's true. Just so Dance of Dads sticks a little out. Sorry?
So this is your favorite?
That's my favorite Iron Maiden album, yeah.
It's beautifully done. I mean, the shading and the details on it. And you can see that he had so much fun with it, with the small writing and scribbling that he added to it, and all the Easter eggs that he planted.
Yeah, the Mickey Mouse in it.
Yeah, the Mickey Mouse.
There was so many things. There was about, I don't know, about 10 or 20 little details. But when we are in the youth, we have only the CD. But when we are a bit older, then you have the big LP, and this must be so much better to have the big one. And then you sit at home and watch, oh, no, there's a Mickey Mouse. Where was that the Mickey Mouse there? And the Easter eggs there.
Yeah, I grew up, I started collecting albums in about like middle of the 90s. So yeah. I collected CDs as well. I never bought a vinyl LP before I was maybe 20-something. And that was also because I wanted to collect some stuff and I wanted to have something special and I wanted to see the artwork up close. So yeah, I haven't seen the Mickey Mouse until I bought Derek Riggs's book. And in the book, you can see it in the size, I think, of a 7-inch maybe.
Yep.
I was able to see some of the details.
Yeah, I'm just looking where the Mickey Mouse is, but I can't see it.
It's in the bottom somewhere, I can't remember, left or right.
In the bottom, okay. And definitely need to check out that.
Yeah, it's pretty small.
Yeah, and when I was a kid, I painted the killer's Eddie on my wall, on my bedroom wall when I was a kid. And another Eddie that I drew was the Eddie from Donington.
Oh yeah, I love him too. The bad one. Yeah.
And this wasn't done really cool. by Derek Riggs. This was done by Mark Wilkinson, and I just had the pleasure of spending a weekend with him in Bloodstock Festival. We had a group exhibition together. It was so much fun to just spend breakfast with the guy and asking him tons of questions about this specific album cover because I redrew it on my bedroom wall when I was 16, and he told me the story about how it was originally done as the poster for Monsters of Rock. So, yeah, Donington used to be called Monsters of Rock. He just did the poster. He was commissioned by the festival, not by Iron Maiden. And when Iron Maiden released the album, they originally released it as like an official bootleg. It was like black logo on top of a white background, so it looked like a bootleg. But after a while, they switched up and just used Mark Wilkinson artwork without even asking him. So luckily, he was smart about it, and instead of getting angry at them and saying, you never asked for permission, he was like, you like my artwork, let's work together. And they've been working together ever since. We did all of the recent album covers. We're still working with them to this day. So it was so much fun to hang out with the guy and ask him questions about this one and all the stuff he did for Judas Priest, like Painkiller and Jagulator, which was something that really baffled me. I wanted to ask him about the pixelization of Jagulator. So yeah, it was a fun weekend.
Yeah,
I can imagine that. To check out Jagulator again.
Jagulator was a weird thing because he made this album cover very much in the vein of Painkiller, but then when he sent it to the band, they used like a graphic designer who thought it would be really cutting edge and modern to put like a digital filter on it that made it into pixel art. Which it just looked so bad, and he was so mad when he saw it. It wasn't approved by him. He just had to live with it. But I think on the vinyl LP, it was done properly. Can't remember.
Okay, don't know about that's a true metal cover.
Yeah, but the close-up one with the pixels, it looks awful. You know, poor Mark.
No, yeah, that's bad when it doesn't come out as expected.
So yeah, it was fun because we had it was part of an exhibition we had together in a Bloodstock Festival along with Crusher, who is the guy who did the album cover for Black Sabbath. He did Dead Again,
Born Again. Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Born Again, Dead Again is typo negative. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, he did Born Again. So it was me and Mark Wilkinson and Crusher and Rodney Matthews, who did all the classic album covers by Nazareth and Praying Mantis, and a few others. It was an amazing setup. So it was, in comparison to the upcoming exhibition in Berlin, it was very low pressure because I was part of a group. So it was just taking a trip to the UK and meeting some people and having some fun over the weekend doing some interviews, but it wasn't like my own production. It was fun to do like a low stress kind of a setup. But now the exhibition in Berlin is going to be very much, it's my very first solo exhibition ever in Berlin. And it's going to be the biggest and most comprehensive one I've ever done, so I'm really excited about it. It's in a couple of weeks. Yeah, already.
Yeah, it starts this month at the 22nd of September. There's the grand opening. And then you can go there until the 27th.
Yeah, the grand opening event is on the 22nd, and then the exhibition is open to the public the 23 until the 27th of September. It's here in Berlin. It's in Papelallee 69 in a gallery called Elster Gallery. And I'm going to be there throughout the entire time. It's going to be open daily from the morning until the evening. Everybody's invited.
Yeah. Go there, people. I'll be there. You need to be there, too. Yeah, and you did an exhibition in Liverpool as well, your own exhibition. Is that in Berlin your second solo exhibition, or did you
I had a few solo exhibitions before? The first one I had was in Apeldoorn in Holland. It was part of Brainstorm Metal Festival. It was, I can't remember how many years ago it was, but afterwards I did a solo exhibition in Copenhagen, and I was again part of the group exhibition in Bloodstock in 2017, and then my first exhibition in Germany was actually a solo exhibition in Wacken, 2019, I think it was. It was the year before the pandemic, so yeah, I think 2019. Yeah. So yeah, this was the last one in Germany until now. It's gonna be fun to come back, and the Liverpool one was a couple of months ago. Yeah, it was great fun. It was fun to meet a lot of the people I got to work with, but didn't get to see, like Aaron from My Dying Bride and the guys from Unfathomable Ruination and Evil, and it was cool. It was it was done in along with the grand opening of a place called the Dark Earth over there in Liverpool, and it was tons of fun.
Yeah, great. Because I saw that that you did that exhibition in Liverpool, and I was wondering why is he doing it in Liverpool and not in Berlin? Because he lives in Berlin, and it would be great to have that in Berlin. And now it's in Berlin.
It all comes down to receiving an offer which makes sense. Because I had a few talks about doing an exhibition in Berlin. One of them was in a small, like very old school metal festival, and one of them was in a more modern one, which took place, I think, in Bergheim, which was more like a sludgy type of metal festival. But I can't remember. So at some point during negotiations, you figure out that maybe, because this is very, very much a new thing to have an exhibition in metal festivals and in metal venues. So sometimes the promoter doesn't realize, whoa, I don't even have the proper lighting to do this. So let's talk again next year. Let's think about where exactly can we use it, which wall, which space. Can it provide enough space for the amount of pieces? Because the infrastructure for bands is very easy. There's a stage. The stage is there for 30 years already. We know that if a band comes, there's a place for them. But as far as the exhibition are concerned, everybody's really excited about the idea, but it takes a few years to set up the infrastructure. And I think with Wacken, it was the same thing. I think Wacken, by the point I did it, the exhibition, we've been already in touch with Thomas, the head organizer of the festival.
Thomas Hansen or something.
Yeah, I think I've been in touch with him for maybe 3 years up until this point. We were looking for the best setup to do it. And in other festivals, it was the same. I think in Copenhagen, they had to buy a tent and create a tent specifically for the exhibition, which was there for the first year. And now it's been going on for a few years. Since, I mean, they use the same tent, they have the infrastructure now, and it's already in place now, which is cool, because now I can come back and everything is not set up for the first time.
That's true. That it's completely different if you work with, let's say, the music industry instead of the art industry to set up those things there.
Yeah, And with the art industry, it's very much its own different separated scene, because I, as you can see, I have had exhibitions in Wacken and in Copenhagen and in Bloodstock, which is unusual for a body of work, which is unusual for a list of past exhibitions. But because this is where I come from, this is naturally where my interests and connections are. Naturally, this is how it grew up organically. People were interested and invited me to do this kind of stuff. And as long as the conditions are there to do it properly, yeah, I would love to take it anywhere. And I'm happy that we're doing it for the first time in Berlin.
How much pieces can we expect there, or how big is it? What can we expect in general?
I have the list. I can't remember. It's a big one. Around 20 plus. I can't remember. Sorry. Because we had the plan of the walls, and we've been keep on adding like one piece after another. And when I say we, my wife Nicole is organizing the whole thing. She's in charge of basically everything that is not painting the actual artwork, which is such a relief for me, because I'm just, this is so out of my wheelhouse, organizing events and taking care of small details and making sure that everything looks elegant and nice. I'm the complete opposite. If I'm in charge of things,
you're the creative part, and she's organizing everything around it. So
every time she's in charge of something, like, oh, I said, oh, this looks so nice, this looks so elegant and professional, and she's like, how? What did you think about doing it? And I was like, if I was to do it, when it comes to aesthetics. Yeah, I don't even decorate my own house. It's just my sense of aesthetics is basically concerned around the square that I'm working on, what's going on inside the square, the square that I take as my mission for years now, and outside of it, it's just I lack the drive and ambition and I think also the talent to pull it off.
So you need a clean surrounding, and you put all your creativity on this small square.
I think it's better when you let people do what they're good at. And I know it's nice to have control over everything and say, okay, no, I'm gonna have this thing exactly as I want it. But sometimes you have no preference. It's not like I have a grand vision about how drinks should be served, or the type of, even the frames. My wife Nicole helped me pick out the frames. I was like, wow, I didn't even think about putting up in this frame. Very first exhibitions were no frames at all. The ones afterwards, I'm like, I just want black, the same black frame, same size for everything. And I had,
but yeah, that can make a total difference if the frame supports the picture, or if it suppresses it.
And while working on this one, Nicole just said to me, "Why are they all in the same size and they're all in the same color?" And I was like, "I don't know, it works, I guess." And then when we tried introducing more colors and more sizes, like, wow, it looks so much better. And it's like, yeah, of course it does. And I'm like, okay, who would have imagined? some aesthetics are beyond me. If I need to pick up my own pair of pants, I hate shopping so much. One of the worst things I can't stand in life is go shopping for clothes or shoes. I hate it. I think all shoes look horrible. All of them. None of it looks good. So,
I just got today two new pairs of shoes. So.
And I mean, some stuff I just don't have a taste in. I just don't have a preference. I'm like, whatever. It's, as long as it doesn't offend me with how ugly it is, I'm just whatever. I'm very picky about what's going on inside my square. But other than that.
Yeah. But yeah, that's kind of interesting because I think a lot of artists express themselves not just through their art, but also through how they look and all that stuff and how they live and all that.
Yeah, I'm the opposite. I usually have the same haircut for like years. Now I have my hair growing long, but before I had like the exact same haircut for years. Because like I just don't want to make this decision. I made it once, and just I don't have any passion for hair styling. I don't care how it looks like. I mean, I want to look nice. I don't want to look bad, but I don't have the passion for it. I just want to find something that I like and just go with it. As far as I'm concerned, I can wear the same pair of pants and the same pair of couple of t-shirts again and again.
Yeah.
It'll save me so much
time. Like a cartoon character who always wears the same.
Yeah, exactly, like a cartoon character. Well, exactly.
Yeah. Great.
I only have like one t-shirt that's the best t-shirt. So why wear the rest of them? There's one that is your favorite and that's it. Bother with the rest even?
That's also a point I was thinking about a lot, or thinking from time to time. If I got some good shirts or some good pants or shoes or whatever, should have bought two or three parts of them. That's why I bought two pairs of shoes today.
Same. Because I love them. I just bought the same pair of shoes like two, three times maybe. I can't remember. Maybe two. You see, I'm not even involved in buying the shoes. So I don't even remember if we bought two or three. But yeah, I like the shoes. But once I find something that I like, I'm just, as far as I'm concerned, just wear the same thing again and again. Let's buy five pairs of them until they outlive me.
Let's come back to your art, kinda. Do you know how much covers you did already for bands?
I have no idea. It must be over 200, maybe around 300 could be.
That's huge.
Because when I started out, I very quickly wanted to focus on doing only album covers. I didn't want to do booklets anymore. I didn't want to do logos. I didn't want to do flyers. I didn't want to do t-shirts. So I've been doing this ever since. I've been doing this full time since I was 20, I think. So it's 18 years now.
18 years. You started with, I think, a Solitary Trail of Omission.
Yeah, that was the first one. This one I did before I did it full time because when I did the solitary one, I think I was 17, maybe 16. I can't remember. But I was just fresh out of high school or still in high school. So it wasn't a job. It was just I made like two album covers a year.
Especially in the last, I would say one or till 3 years, it feels like nearly every week or at least every month there's an album coming out with one of your covers.
Yeah.
It's great. And it's also a broad span when it comes to bands. I mean, of course, it's all metal bands, but there's a great span, as you said, for example, My Dying Bride or last time Creator or Hatebreed, so different genres within the metal genre.
Yeah, and I think what I'm very aware of is not making them be interchangeable because I don't want to let my ego take charge of letting each and every album cover look like my work. It has to be a collaborative effort with the band. So if you take what you said is a good example. You said The Creator and My Dying Bride. Both of these album covers were very much accepted with a very positive response by the fans, and I really appreciate it. But if you take the logo of My Dying Bride and put it on the Creator one and put the Creator one on the My Dying Bride, the fan reaction would be, this is something else that I'm paying really attention to. So it won't be interchangeable. So it won't be like I'm doing the same album cover again and again, or even the same style. With each and every project that I take, I need to listen to the music and find out about the essence of it and make sure that at the end what I do I need to love it. I need to like it as well, but it should serve the album. It should serve the music. So with My Dying Bride, it was a very different approach from Creator. And I think if on the press release, it won't say my name, you wouldn't know that the same guy did those two album covers. You wouldn't know it.
Yes, especially when I scrolled through your galleries and stuff, and then I said, that's from you, and that's from you, didn't know that, and yeah. Sometimes, I mean, you can imagine because you got your own style, kind of, but as you said, it's from band to band, it looks totally different. And
yeah, and if the bands are similar, then it's going to look more similar. I mean, okay, the Sodom album cover and the Creator album cover, maybe you can sense that it's the same guy who did it, but both of them feel like this one feels like Sodom and this one feels like Creator because of the characters and that specific style.
Yeah.
But
they have, when you compare those two, it's kind of the same same view on the characters, I would say, on the...
Yeah.
What's similar.
Yeah, it's the same camera angle. When I think about camera angles, I usually don't do anything very modern, anything very newer comic book kind of thing, where the hand is like very close to the camera, so the hand is really big, and then the rest of the body is like next to very small in the background, which is something you will get in very modern comic book album book covers. Because it was following the invention of the camera. Following the invention of the camera, you have this depth of field that wasn't there in classical art. In classical art, it was very much as if you were taking a photo with like a wide from very far away. So everything is more or less the same size. So all of this like very dynamic depth of field was something that... for me, really dates the artwork. It really gives it this modern aesthetic, and you can sense that this is something that was done from the maybe 70s, 80s forward. So this is something else that I just, I don't want to incorporate anything that would make these pieces feel like they're from a specific era, which is why I go back to a lot of classical aesthetics, because for me, classical aesthetic is very much like neutral and clean, because it can be from a fairy tale, it can be from 400 years ago, but it can also be something that happens like 2 years ago, and it can be anywhere from Europe to Africa to Australia. As long as you don't put specific clothing on the characters or modern technology or anything, it can be everywhere. So this is another thing that I was really drawn to, not to have any motif that will distract from the character that I want to build and the story that I want to give, because if it's not integral to the story, I just leave it out, because it just it takes away from the impact to me when I see stuff that hints at where the story takes place and in which time period, unless it's very crucial to the story that we're telling. When I did the X-Deo album cover, The Immortal Wars, this is about a very specific war, the Carthaginian War. So it has to look the part. You have to get the Roman...
Yeah, because clothing. It's a themed band and... place in that era.
So you have to really grab those details, right? Because this is a very much a historical depiction, which is what the band is after, which is what you're trying to convey.
No. So how close do you work with each band? Is it always so that you, for example, Zoom like we do now, or that you meet in person, or do they just send you the lyrics or the music up front, or how do you work in general with bands, or is it different from band to band?
The usual way of working is just through emails. But then I try and make make the effort and meet the guys face to face when they come and play in Berlin, or whenever I have maybe an exhibition in a festival, then we meet together. But usually that takes place after we've done like one or two album covers together. So the usual way is just working for emails, which is good for me because it provides me with documentation, provides me with a written history of what we talked about and what we agreed on, what we said we're going to do and everything, because all of those details are very crucial, because otherwise you're just going to spend a couple of weeks painting something that at the end is like, what? This is what we said we weren't going to do. So it's very important to me to be efficient when it comes to communication, because I don't have this amazing memory when it comes to whatever somebody else was saying in a conversation. It's hard for me to memorize all of this. But when it's in writing, it's very much just there for me to revisit.
Okay, and the bands are coming to you and said, now we're having this album and this is the way we want it. Or do you say, come on, give me your music, I listen to it and create maybe a little artwork and this is the way we maybe can do it?
Both of them. I ask in advance, do you have a specific concept? Because usually when the band comes to me, they have the lyrics written. Or maybe the album title. So whatever it is that they already have, I said, let me know all of those details about the album cover. And some of them even have the concept ready in advance. But I think most of my work is very much based loosely around the music, the lyrics, a vague theme, let's say, not a concept, but a theme. The band will come to me and say, this next album is about the suffering of humankind, or about losing a loved one, or something like that. And then I'm left on my own to come up with an original and memorable visual representation of it.
Okay.
Which is ideal for me.
Okay. Let's talk about an example with Venom Prison.
Yeah.
I think the first two album covers you did based on the lyrics, and I saw an interview for the third album cover. You were influenced by your grandfather's history, kind of, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. Because the last Venom Prison album had a lot of lyrics that dealt with the lives of people in incarcerations, people in jail, in prison, in detention camps, and
that's the link. Okay.
Yeah, and I immediately was taken back to my grandfather's stories from World War II when he was telling. I mean, he wrote a book detailing his biography from the war years later, and one of the things he said was that. He and the Angel of Death became friends during the war, and he got so desensitized to death, to see his entire family being sent out to die. And he was just, he considered himself, the old self of himself, dead. And he was reborn during the war. He was no longer the same person because he was desensitized to the worst horror you can think of. And so I really wanted to grab the moment when a person is losing it, is being so overwhelmed with horror surrounding him, that is the moment that the circle of violence is very much being implanted into him, and it's something that he won't be able to shake off, and it goes in circles again and again. It's something that for years I wanted to do something about this topic, but I was never able to really grab a motive that will encapsulate it without being cliche or gorish or look like horror art or something that just disrespects the concept. until I lay down in bed one night and I wasn't able to fall asleep. And I was lying on my side like this with my eyes fully open because I was just so awake and I couldn't fall asleep. And I was just, if I would take a photo of myself or somebody would watch me from the side, they would think I look like a total weird creep right now because I just look so, it was such an intense pose.
Yeah, it is really intense. The eyes are staring at you directly. That's
and basically
crazy.
a few days later, I modeled for this thing. I took a photo of myself lying on the couch in order to grab the eye expression, which is what ended up serving as photo reference for the album cover. And it was really important to me to incorporate the other figure that shuts down the face, the mouth, because it was also about not being able to speak, so you won't be undetected. It's a horrible scenario and horrible feeling, and I wanted to give this concept real justice. And it grew up to be one of my personal favorites, and I'm happy you say you love it too.
Yeah, it's so kind of oppressive. You feel beklemmed.
yeah.
So yeah, it looks great, but you kind of get a bad feeling, like a shiver down your spine, kind of.
Yeah.
Because it creeps a little.
It's something that I had to deal with over the last 3 years. That a lot of people have pointed out that their favorite stuff of mine is the creepy stuff and the horrible stuff and the stuff that scares them and stuff that looks that gives them a bad feeling. And it was weird for me to think of myself as a horror artist because I grew up, maybe I was a fan of the Elm Street movies, but that's about it. I'm really not a horror buff. I've never seen Halloween. I've never seen Friday the 13th. I maybe saw half of The Exorcist. I'm just really not into not really deep into horror movies, but sometimes you just you do what comes naturally to you when it comes to thinking about stuff. And I think the stuff I think about that stands out is the creepy horrible stuff.
Yeah. Also, my favorite cover is the first one in prison, Animus.
Oh yeah.
And it's also special because you know what happens, but you don't see it because it's blacked out when they cut off his testicles.
Yeah.
And that's the most creepy stuff when your imagination starts, I think.
Exactly. This is why I try. I'm happy you said that because this is. I always try to be not so blunt about violence or shock or horror, but instead use subtlety, even when it comes to a concept like this, because your imagination will fill in the gaps with what is right for you, and there's just it's the best. And there's nothing that is more right for you than what your imagination is going to fill those gaps with, which is why the book is always better than the movie.
Yeah, right. Mm.
Whatever they're going to do in the movie is not as good, is not right for you as like your imagination would fill the gaps when you read the book. So this is why I try to be as vague as possible about everything that can be serving as a gateway to the imagination to go to run wild and open up exciting new imagery, but also put the concept across and make sure that the story comes across. But also, I think I wanted to introduce subtlety because direct horror and gore are just so overdone that I wanted to do something different. Because you can have mutilated body parts in tens of thousands album covers. And I just don't want it to be boring at the same time.
And that's, I think, also special about your works. It doesn't show everything at the beginning, when you look closer, you see different things. For example, let's stay with Venom Prison. When the second cover came out, I just realized after watching it several times on the cover that a woman in the front has six legs. Yeah. At the first, you see just the two legs and think, yeah, it's a woman. But then you see it's she gives birth to spiders, and of course she has six legs and two arms, so that makes eight. Yeah. But at the first, you don't really see it, and that's kind of special.
Yeah, because if it's too blunt and it's too obvious, then you skip it. You just don't pay more attention to it. My biggest and most in-depth connection with album covers is the one that I spend a lot of time with. So one way to achieve this is just taking tons of details, which is also something that can become boring in this, at some point if so many people have done it. But another way is just making sure that you can use subtlety and draw in the viewer to take a closer look. And then they spend a few more times with it and discover more about it.
That's why I'm excited about the exhibition.
Oh, yeah.
How big are your paintings in general? Or do you have the same size for every painting?
No. It's going to be different sizes. It's going to be... I'm going to have the full Halloween piece exhibited for the first time. It's going to be 180 centimeters over 60. Some of those are 60 over 60, some of those are 90 over 90. And yeah, pretty big, but different sizes. Yeah.
Okay. And how much time do you need in general when it comes from the first idea to finish painting?
Oof, that's a good question because I don't keep track.
For example, if a band comes to you and says, we have a release in half a year or in 2 months, what is a possible way to, or when does a band need to contact you when they will release a record?
Usually, I'm working with a waiting list of prior booked projects that I need to finish up first. So usually I'm booked around like 4 months in advance, but that way I can also use those 4 months in order to spend some time with the lyrics and the concept and try to think about the composition. So once it comes a time to do it, I have maybe a few weeks that I want to spend actually painting it, because over that, you just won't be able to maintain a career out of it. You're going to do only like a handful of commissions a year.
Yeah. Do you also do pictures just for yourself or for friends, or you just do commissioned cover artworks?
No, because what I do...
Or could we say paint a picture for us?
What I do is I don't do it, I don't fully realize it. What I do is I only do a sketch of it, like a black and white sketch, and I save it up for later on. So later on, when a band comes to me and they have a set of lyrics or maybe an album title that works with this specific one, I can say, okay, I already have the sketch of an idea I had that works perfectly for this one. So let's finish up this one. And then I can show it to them in a rough black and white.
Oh, okay.
So you can look at it as like a lot of my album covers now are basically like personal works, started out as personal works, because I also already had the idea in advance, but I don't fully realize it and flesh it out until I can present it to the right project.
And then you add the details for the band, so kind of,
Yeah. And then we work together on it and we discuss about how we're going to finish it up.
Great. Richard, do you have some questions before I just talk alone?
No, it's okay. No, I think we have already asked everything. I just want to say I really love your work, especially the one from Scythe, the Japanese black metal band, Here to Despair, and the other one was Insomniaphobia, and it's so great that they are so different. The first one is so... so much of details, and you can look and there's, okay, there's so much you can find out, and you I looked about it today and I saw, oh, there's the band logo over the top in the corner. I never saw it. And then you have Here to Despair, and it is really low back and classical, and it's also great. It's really cool artwork. Mm-hmm. I really like it.
Thank you. When it comes to incorporating logos and text, I try to pick up something that will work with this specific one and not just apply the exact same, my favorite template to each and every album. So sometimes it goes in directions that are very much the opposite of their last album cover. But in each and every instance, it needs to work with a specific image. So I'm glad you like it.
Yeah, thank you.
And I love the band as well.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
That's also why I asked at the beginning if you prefer or like Jan van Meer, because Here to Despair reminded me kind of the Milkmaid from van Meer.
Because of the light kind of from the window,
There's also a question, maybe a stupid question, but how does a painting... ends up on a CD or LP cover? How is the process behind that? Do you photograph it? Do you copy it? Do you scan it? Or how do you do that?
No. For the last 10 years, I've converted my entire process to digital. I've been painting it digitally.
Okay.
So I can take the same file and use it as it is for an album cover. So luckily, I don't have to rely on scanning and photographing and stitching together and adjusting colors. And
As I thought, it's all painted.
it took a lot of time to convert in a way that won't sacrifice the hand signature, the brushwork, and the look of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it worked.
I mean, I'm no art expert and I haven't seen the original or the printed ones. I thought it's all painted, but it's great.
It is, but
like digitally painted.
Yeah, exactly.
What kind of program do you use or how do you do it?
I've been doing it only with Photoshop for as long as I can remember. I've been using it ever since I was 14. It was a long time ago, and too late in the game for me to switch.
Yeah, of course. For that long time, it's hard to switch.
Oh, yeah.
And the final result looks great, so no need to switch, I think.
Yeah,
never change a winning team.
Yeah, for sure. I'm sorry that I need to cut it out, but I have to go in a few minutes. But it's been a pleasure. Be on the podcast. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for your time. And we spent a lot of time. We don't want to waste your time. Okay, just one final question though. What's next? What you're working at the moment on? If you can talk about it.
I can't remember. Me and Devin Townsend have been working on an album cover for 5 years now.
Oh,
okay.
Doing a new Incantation album soon, a new Atheist album cover. I can't keep track of what I can talk about and what I can't talk about. So yeah, it's better for me to shut up.
Okay.
If you go to my website and you go to my contact page, there's a link saying complete list of credits. If you click it, you can see some coming soon listings. So that's where you can see some stuff and get.
Okay, we check that out.
Some sneak peeks into what's coming up.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well then, thank you for your time again, Eliran. And
thank you for your work.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your work.
Congratulations to you and looking forward to see you.
Yeah, thank you.
Yep.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure.
So have a great evening and see you on the 22nd.
You too. Cheers, guys.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye.